Good evening, glory, hallelujah to you. What the heck's your story and what's going through you? This is the glorified version of a bass fishing talk show. Make no mistakes about it. We're here to have a good time. I'm your host, Pat Renwick. Welcome, Bass Galaxy. Hello. Yes. We are back. We are back. And to say we are honored tonight is an understatement. Andy and I, JR, were all freaking out. Basically, we have the one and only Rick Klun on the show tonight, folks. Yes, Bass Galaxy. Rick Klun. And we have him here tonight to inspire. And that's the sole purpose of this evening's broadcast and the podcast to follow. Rick, we know a lot about Rick's techniques and what he's done and as far as his tournament prowess. And we're going to try and get to know Rick a little better tonight. And we're looking forward to that. So, that being said, let's get the party started. Basically, tonight is a great opportunity for everybody here in the Bass Galaxy, in the Straycast audience, because tonight we're giving it away. We're giving away the house. So JR over on the chat board there tonight, he's got not only one, not two, three prizes again. On Straycast, your chance to win three prizes. All you have to do is like and share this live Facebook feed. First prize, get this. Now we have Straycast merch. And he's going to, JR is going to put that in the link there. The deal in the link for the merch store. It's Straycast hats and shirts and all kinds of good stuff. That's by Mad Science Print Lab. Thanks, Danny, and everybody over there for hosting the Straycast merch store. We are giving away, in honor of that, Straycast shirt and hat tonight. Like and share the live Facebook feed. You got a chance for that. Boom. Now here's another deal. Get this. As usual, this is the place. This is the place to party on a Wednesday night. Straycast is giving away the Tin Cup Extravaganza Pack. Yes! The Tin Cup Whiskey Extravaganza Pack. Like and share live Facebook feed. Thank you. Wow. The live Facebook feed for your chance to win the Tin Cup Whiskey. Bassin Extravaganza Pack. And finally, last but not least, this is my favorite prize. I'm entering for this opportunity. I know Andy is. I know Fighter is. This is a chance to win something from Rick Klun's garage. And it could be an old rusty screw from the workbench. It could be part of a deer shed. Or it could be a Bassmaster Classic trophy, but probably not that. But all you got to do is like and share the live Facebook feed and your chance to win something from legend Rick Klun himself. That's pretty daggone amazing. All right. You know who else is amazing? Yeah. Our producer over there. He's right on the head like a producer should be. Andrew Ellenberger. He's a ginger ninja. And he's a hockey dad. Hi, Ginge.
Yo, Pat.
How you doing?
Galaxy. I'm good. And you?
You got laser beams.
I do.
As usual. Are you excited about Klun?
Very.
I have so much nervous energy.
I know. I can tell.
Tonight. Bouncing off the walls. Yeah. Plus the 17 cups of tin cup coffee.
Yeah.
And help. The coffee out of the tin cup. You know what I'm trying to say.
I do.
Dude, I got to tell you, Ginge. It's pretty cool when we get an opportunity to get a guy like Rick Klun to come on the show.
It still seems surreal all the time.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know. It's a chance to delve inside the history book, and we're going to do that today.
Let's give the people what they want.
Hey, we're America's talk show, Ginge. You know that? We're the talk show of the people. Hey, you know what else is going on for the people? Speaking of this, let's take care of some more business. OmniaFishing.com has a Xenon Extravaganza Pack going on right now. That's right. All you got to do at Omnia Fishing, it's every Xenon, right, Ginge? Every casting reel, all three of them, the Xenon X, the MGX, and the LTX. Each reel has a different gift card give back. up to $200. I think that's on the LTX. So you purchase an Abu Garcia Xenon, and Omnia Fishing gives you a gift card back, up to $200. So a chance to get a pretty cool reel at a discounted price. You know what I'm saying? Hey, speaking of discount, you know what's discounted in weight? The new Impulse Lithium 12-volt starter battery, bud. That's right. I'm telling you, the Impulse Lithium 12-volt, it's amazing how much weight it's going to take off a Gingy's basket. It's silly. It's absolutely silly. Hey, how we doing over there in the Indianapolis way? Let's get Indianapolis in here. And you know what I mean when I say that. I raise my cup to the one and only. Here he comes. Maybe, maybe not. There he is. He's taking his whiskey home. Yes.
What's going on?
Luke Foley. How you doing, bud? It's the Whiskey Gypsy himself.
Good. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Are you in the Whiskey Palace right now?
I am. I'm in the Whiskey Palace. I'm very nervous. Mr. Kwan's coming on.
Me too. I've had 17 cups of coffee out of my 10-cup mug today.
I've had three of these, so I'm, it's helping, but still, I feel like, you know, if I was a musician, I'm kind of opening up for the Beatles right now, and I just feel like a jerk. So
I'm
so nervous.
Yeah,
I'm
you
so
are nervous. The opening band, that's for sure. You are the opening band right now. Well, thank God you got a little bit of that tin cup whiskey to ease your nerves. And for those and those that don't know, Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey is the official brown liquor of Basin and the official brown liquor of Stray Casks. And Luke Foley, you being the Whiskey Gypsy, bring to us, the Bass Galaxy, every Wednesday night, a Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey word of the week. And whenever the Bass Galaxy hears that word, you take a little sippy of whatever it may be. It might be an ice cold Coca-Cola. It could be a very scalding black coffee, or it could be a Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey. And Luke, what is the Tin Cup Whiskey word of the week?
Legend. You got to go with legend.
Wow, legend. Okay. All right.
That's right. Or pioneer or anything, just to, you know.
Forefather. Anything to do.
This man is. Yes.
I got exactly. It. And please drink responsibly when you're sipping tonight. Yeah. If you might hear those words a lot. So, you know, please. And again, Luke Foley, you will call people off work tomorrow, correct?
I will, and I'm already 3D because I'm nervous about tonight. So
why are you nervous?
I just told you. It's like I'm opening up for the Beatles here.
Well, you did a great job so far, Luke.
I even went upstairs. Remember those rods he cranked with? The Wright McGill Turquoise?
Oh, yeah. Those are good ones.
I even went tonight. I got 12 of them upstairs. Don't tell Courtney.
You're stashing the old fun cranking rods. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Clearwater cranking, murky water cranking.
You got them all. Light square bill, heavy square bill, the whole deal.
I got them all.
Hey, no doubt about it. The man is important in all of our bass and lives. And I know especially yours. And Foley, thank you for being a legend yourself to Stray Cass. In the bassin industry. I mean, you're quite a legend yourself. I don't know if you know that or not.
I don't believe that at all, but I appreciate you saying that.
You've been around since the old Crown Royal Aaron days. So don't you say.
I have.
You've been around the block, sir. You've been around the block.
I have. And even back way back then, we knew how special Aaron was going to be. That's for sure.
That's it. But hey, Foles, thank you for everything you do for Stray Casts, and especially thank you for everything you do for the Bass Galaxy and the contributions from Tin Cup Whiskey. All right, bud. Well, you have an awesome night, and let's put the power pull. Oh, before we go, want to remind everybody, three like and shares, if you haven't heard, right? You're giving away stuff again, Foley, so I hope you're happy about that.
Okay.
It's the Rick Klun Extravaganza Pack, Tin Cup Whiskey is. Now, get this one. Like and share the live Facebook feed for your chance to win something from Rick's Garage. And also, you're eligible for this one, too. Like and share the live Facebook feed for your chance for some Stray Cast swag. Hat and shirt from the Stray Cast swag shop. Hey, put the power poles down. Don't go anywhere. We're coming back with Rick Klun. Yes.
the legend.
That's right. Peace, Foles. Thank you. Love
Bye.
You, bud.
Bye, guys. See ya.
There's a moment when you're faced with a challenge, and just solving the problem isn't good enough. Even if that means breaking the rules and shredding apart conventional ways of thinking, all in the name of creating something truly remarkable. With this much control at its command, we didn't stop with just one. We created two incredible trolling motors. Introducing the new PowerPole Move Brushless Trolling Motor.
This is the mountain, and this is Mountain Whiskey. Unspoiled, untamed, forever wild. There's no safety net, no way down. Up here, it's just man and the mountain and his tin cup. Tin Cup Whiskey. Mountain Whiskey.
Want to know the difference between Power Bait and other soft plastics? Ask the fish. Berkeley scientists have thousands of flavors tested on thousands of fish. Natural, man-made, every bait that's ever hit the water. No matter the shape, size, or color, Power Bait is the only one that has scientifically proven. Fish bite and will not let go.
Realize your boat's potential with outboard performance accessories that improve the handling, speed, and economy of your boat. Find your perfect accessory from Bob's Machine.
Welcome back. This is the glorified version of a bass fishing talk show, and I'm your host, Pat Renwick, and we are stoked, to say the least, to welcome right now bass fishing icon, the one and only Rick Klun. Yes, hello, Rick. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Pat.
What's up, bud?
Hello. Can you? I'm just enjoying the heat here in the Ozarks. I'm sure. I hope y'all over your smoke up there.
Oh man, it's so smoggy here. It was the red moon last night. It was crazy. So much smog.
Oh really?
Yeah. So much smog here.
You've had too many of those, probably. Yeah. I'm hoping, you know, before we go up to St. Clair, it'll have changed a little bit. That's still about a month away.
Yeah, then clear up a little bit. That's for sure, man. Well, it's great to see you, Rick, and always an honor to have you here on the Straycast Show. And we've learned a lot from you over the years through your tournament fishing and your technique developments through this sport. And tonight we'd like to learn a little bit more about your personality, if that's okay, and try and explore the multiversal mind of you, Rick Klun. Is that okay?
Well, it's okay with me as long as it is with the audience, because they may still they may be looking for a little deeper information.
we're gonna dig deep here. And first off, I want to acknowledge the common bond that brings all of us together. You and I and everybody in this audience, everybody that fishes, and that's that bass, that fish. Isn't it amazing how that common bond brings us all together, has provided a career for you, provided a career for so many, and has provided love and passion for so many? It's amazing, right?
Well, it really is. I mean, you can look at it from a modern viewpoint, or you look at it from an ancient viewpoint. You know, man and other animals have made that kind of connection or throughout mankind. And this one is really a strange one, because it's you know, it's both have benefited tremendously from the connection, both us as anglers and both the fish himself. You know, that fish has, and our love for it has encouraged us to protect its habitat. So much of the creatures we're losing on the earth is because of habitat destruction. And yet the bass and our love for him, we've really got involved through conservation efforts and everything else to protect that habitat, to make it better, to fight for the weeds being in the lake like we continually do. And, so it's been a mutual, relationship. I think it's what it's done for us besides allowing us to chase a little green fish. Well, it's really kept us connected to the outdoors.
Yeah.
And like I've often stated, it's the last remaining vehicle for the masses to stay connected to nature. We don't have very many others that allow the masses to do that.
Yeah. We need to be outside to connect to it. No doubt.
No doubt.
That's for sure. Rick, what you are to so many is we hear the term often, especially in social media, about influencers. And we talk about it on this show. You are influencer can have a negative and a positive connotation. You are an inspirer, 100%. And everything you do.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. And everything you do, whether you like it or not, seems to end in a positive outlook. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's not by accident. I'm going to be honest. Every day when I do allow myself to look at the media world, and even now, it all kind of is throwing negative things at you. Even the Weather Channel now, it disappoints me because you get up in the morning and you're looking for the weather, and your weather may be beautiful, but what they're going to harp on is the other side of the world where the weather's not so beautiful. And then they're going to harp on a volcano here and earthquake here. And yeah, a little bit of information we need to know, but can we enjoy our weather at home? It's good for today.
Yeah.
It might not be tomorrow, but so much so intentionally, people get bombarded by enough negativity, like you're pointing out. Why should I contribute to that? I don't want to contribute to that. I've lived in this world, call it whatever you want, for almost 50 years now. It leaves me feeling good about every day I'm in it.
Yeah, is it ever hard to be Rick Klun? Like, or is it hard now, or has it ever been hard at any point of your life? Like, do you feel a great weight of responsibility?
No, not really. Rick Klun's actually been the easy part. And I've told you the story about my daughter always giving me the cold shoulder after I've been gone several weeks at tournaments. And I'd come home and she'd call in my lap, but she wouldn't ever give me a hug or anything. And one time a TV show come on and I knew it was coming on. I turned it on. It was a fishing show. And all of a sudden I knew I was going to be on it. And all of a sudden I'm on the TV and she jumps up in my lap and points, Dad, look, there's Rick Klun. And I thought it was funny at first. And I go, that ain't funny. That person that she's looking at is not the person's lap she's sitting in.
Wow.
That's Rick Klun. And he's dang good at what he does most of the time. But then it hits you. It's the person that she's lap she's sitting in as good at what he does. Father. And or as good a husband, as good a friend. And that's where that was the hard part, is being the real me. The Rick Klun part, everybody's kind of painted into this beautiful picture, and I like it. I appreciate it. But at the same time, that's not totally who Rick Klun is.
Well, who is Rick Klun?
He's like every human being on the planet. We're evolving, hopefully evolving in a positive direction. And that's, again, why I like to encourage people, don't accept that all your greatest moments are in the past. Because that's just another one of those timelines that we invent, that things are over, and they don't have to be over. They're different. But still, there's incredible things you can do. And as a human, we should be trying to be a better human every day.
Yeah.
And that goes way beyond fishing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially, let's just keep it in fish. And when it comes to fishing, it seems you've heard that Led Zeppelin song, I guess, that Stairway to Heaven. And there's two paths you can go by. Robert Plant says in that song. There's two paths you can go by in life. And it seems like in Bassin, there's a couple paths you can go by to achieve success. And I don't know necessarily if they're that definitive, but first off, I want to ask you.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, well, let me ask
they're
you.
They're very definitive.
Tell me what success is to you, Rick Lund.
I've been around. I'm not going to, you know, you don't look at yourself the same way other people do, but I've been around some very successful men in my life. And some of them have been friends and some of them have been not so friends. But I've recognized, and this is true in fishing, that there's two types of successful people. One is success is at the expense of other human beings. And the other one, his success elevates those human beings around him. And fishing was no different. In the beginning, I was told by several guys, that if you're going to be a great angler and you're going to have success, you have to do it this way. And if you want to, you know, and a lot of them was abusing your, back then we were had other partners. We drew other guys who were in the boat. They were actually other pros. And I'll never forget one angler one time, and now it was a young angler he was talking to that just won the tournament, got out of the boat, and he shook his partner's hand, and his partner said, I want to thank you. I've had a great day today. And I was observing it, and then his mentor came up to him, the young angler that won, and said, if I ever hear one of your partners say they've had a great day again, I can't use the word he used, but you blanked up.
That's true.
And back then, so that was the direction you could, okay, go to be successful. Do I have to do that to be successful? I didn't like that. So I refused to go that direction. And we all had places in our road to whatever we're doing in life that there's a fork that you can do it the right way or the wrong way. And I know that's subjective.
Sure.
But I could not do it that way. I would not like myself at the end of the journey if I was treating people that way. And I've been around some incredible people like Johnny Morris and Forrest Wood and Jerry McInnes who did it the right way. They were successful, but they elevated those around them. And then there was others. And I'm not going to mention their name. They're incredibly successful, but it's at the expense of others. And that's like I'm pointing out, that's the same thing that happens in fishing. It's that there's guys that have been successful that I don't like the way they achieved it. It was at the expense of even friends sometimes that were in the same sport.
Yeah, it seems that way. It's probably in any business or setting. You know, I mean, like... it's just it's crazy how there is definitive paths, I guess.
Oh, definitely. And that's what I try to tell my children is, you know, and who can tell you what those are? I said, but the only thing that really is every day, at the end of every day, you like yourself. And I just can't imagine, and I guess some of them do, but I can't imagine at the end of the day that those people really like who they are. But that's just me.
No, and I totally get where you're coming from, because it sounds so cliche, but happiness is honestly everything. And happiness has to start with how you're feeling about yourself. So for you to say, hey, you got to be able to, you know, be happy with you at the end of the day makes total sense. It's...
Well, we're not always. None of us are perfect. I mean, there's days, you know, so happy with yourself, but that's good. I mean, hopefully you learn from that and you learn why and you correct it. And then, but that's again part of human evolution is, and that when I said, you know, that my daughter said, hey, there's Rick Klun, I had to realize that the person that she called father might not be as good a father as that Rick Klun was a fisherman. And I have to correct that if I can. And so, and hopefully, you know, we all have that, you know, that recognition, that when that's happening, and she kind of made me wake up to it.
That self-awareness. That's good. That's amazing that it happened. You seem to be, there's only few, very few in this game throughout history who seem to be natural born competitive derbers. It almost seems, I mean, I've shared a boat with you. Everything is second nature. It's like you are an Earth Warrior on the hunt every time you go out. And it's, if you watch Rick Lund footage from 1976, and if you watch Rick Lund footage from 2023 of you taking off in the morning, your demeanor is exactly the same. It's the look of a warrior. Do you realize that about you?
I feel it, I miss it because it's not always there like it used to be. Hmm. And I appreciate you observing it, but it's and again, it's just part of the evolution. And I had an epiphany in my career is actually when I won the Red Man All-American out at Lake Havasu in the 80s. And I had an epiphany at that point that I understood kind of how everything worked at a mental, physical level. I understood what it took, understood what I had to do. I actually, but also this epiphany was, and it was just like an internal voice said, okay, you know how this works now. But you can't just use it to win another trophy. You can't just use it to win another check. And so that's where I really had to go deep into myself and try to, and it was tough for me to understand.
Wait a second.
That's all I'd prepared myself for.
Is this the total immersion type principle that you've spoken about before on this show? And were you totally immerse yourself into the sport of bass fishing to achieve success? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, it's beyond that, but you got to remember where I was at that point in time. That point in time, I was fishing 25 to 30 big events a year. So 25 to 30 weeks of the year, I was competing. And in between, I was guiding. I was more than a human. And I don't mean that the wrong way. I was part of everything. I was this human that understood natural rhythms at a very high level. I was acclimated to no matter what the conditions were. My mind was, I was carrying positive information from one event, from one day to the other. And, I was in tune. I was totally in tune. You know, you see other athletes, and I've watched some of the documentaries on Michael Jordan and some of these other ones, where they are totally aware of everything that's happening in their court. They knew where every player was. They knew where the ball was. They knew whatever player was going to do before they did it. And I got that way with fishing, and I got that way where I knew when I was going to win an event before it even happened. And I went on a quest from that point on where I was trying to understand what was happening. And I don't mean to compare myself to Einstein, but when Einstein had some of his greatest breakthroughs in physics and quantum physics, he always made the statement, this did not come from my rational mind. It came from somewhere else. And like him, I had to figure out where somewhere else was. Yes. And, of course, there's a lot of theories on that. And there's a lot of people who short circuit that, but it's much bigger than one individual can completely understand. And I'm still trying to, I understood where what Einstein's eventual conclusion was. And I agree with it, but it's one of those things that I had to understand. You know, all of a sudden I'm in a tournament, and this thought hits me: crank the engine, run 40 miles down the lake, catch that one fish just down there, and you're going to win the event. And it would happen.
Yeah.
you know, that's the kind of stuff that you, I'm like Einstein, where did that come from? You know, and you can answer that a lot of different ways, but it's not as simple as you think it is.
Well, here's what I'm intrigued about, Rick. I want to back up a second. You said that you had kind of figured it out, but you could not use it to win a check or a trophy. What are you using it to win?
It's not about, like you say, it's not about winning. I haven't totally still figured it all out. It was again getting back to winning is still achievable, but make sure you're doing it the right way. Make sure that you're not. If my ego is just selfishly and to try to claim, if my ego, what's saying to me, if your ego is just concerned about winning another trophy, dominating the other people around you, or, you know, winning a check, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. Think of the right reasons to do it, you know, and it was somehow, you know, getting back to what we were talking about, that, you know, understanding it and understanding what there is to give back. And first you got to understand what there is to give back. And part of it was what you started off the conversation with, this relationship that we have with this little green bass, this little green fish, and nature. Okay. Are you going to, you know, use this vehicle to try to promote other people to use this vehicle to put themselves back on the water, back in the woods, back in the trees and on the lakes? Because it's, and then again, I hate to go very deep into it, but it's like my dad used to say, you know, he'd tell my mom, he says, if I don't go fishing this weekend, Daphne, I'm going to go crazy. And I thought that was just a joke, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And what he was saying about himself is true about society. If we lose our connection, which is the ultimate connection, Mitakuye Oyasan Lakota, that all things are connected, then we're going to lose our sanity. Social sanity as well. And I don't want to play that game, but that connection is so important to our sanity as a species.
Yeah. Wow. It's and everything is connected. I love how you say that everything is connected. And in bringing it back to what you need to give in order to get, that's that earth warrior concept or principle, isn't it? You have to give to get, right?
I'd have to think. Yeah, I mean, I understand that and I believe that, because doesn't that really exist at all levels too? I mean, it's not just at a save the world level, it's at your save your marriage level, save whatever, you know. We have to, it's not worth being part of something if you're not both getting an equal, somewhat of an equal contribution out of it. And in other words, we all take, but we should, like you say, try to give as much back in return as we end up taking. But I've often, back in my early days, I often thought, you know, you thank the fish, and you thank, and just like the eagle does, because that fish is what keeps you alive. My survival has been determined by a little green fish, just like a bear going after salmon or an eagle going after fish. You know, that's given me life, and that's been where my livelihood has come from. And it's given me, you know, I can't go out and tell a young kid all of this, but I can try to put him in a world that will teach him that, and teach him that, hey, that world out there is really important to your life, and in many, many ways. And then that is why when my first son was born, I told Melissa, my wife, that we got to move. We were living in New Mexico, 8,000 feet in the mountains. we got to move back to Missouri, and I got to move him into the woods on a creek because he's not going to listen to me when I start talking this way. You know, your children don't do that. But if I put him in the woods and I put him on a creek, hopefully the trees and the animals and the creek and the water will teach him that. And that's all I really, that's the only thing I know to do is just try to motivate people in a positive way that how important that is.
Yeah, that's amazing. And all of that has carried over to a career that is still evolving and accomplishments that are honestly beyond grasp of so many anglers. So I would be amiss, Rick, if I did not mention to the audience, you're a 4-time Bassmaster Classic winner. I mean, unreal right there. And a back-to-backer. All right. You've won the Western Open twice. Not once, twice. BASS Angler of the Year. Everything in bass fishing that you could possibly do, you pretty much have done. You're a Bass Fishing Hall of Fame member. It's pretty astonishing to look at a career that is this successful. And do you know how many BASS events? This is BASS. Do you know how many tournaments you fished? How many derbs at Bass, Rick?
No, I know it's in over 500, I think.
Yeah, it's well.
That may be all my. All,
it's, yeah. It's almost
but
there.
It's the same. Yes. You know, I the last tournament I fished, I think I caught one fish the last day, and somebody said, "Are you really going to go up there and weigh that in?" And you're always tempted. You don't want to go up there and put the brown paper sack over your eyes because you're embarrassed you only caught one fish, you know. But then I realized that nobody has probably walked across this BAS stage more than I have. And this one fish will allow me to do it one more time.
Yeah, bud.
And because we don't know how many more times we can do anything. And that one fish allows me to do something I just couldn't wait to do when I was young. And now I've done it, I think, more than anybody except maybe Hell Sharp or Trip Weldon, because they were on it every day, you know, but they're the tournament directors.
I got to ask you this question, and I don't mean it to be morbid by any means, but would it be a happy place for you to just die on the water during a derb? Would that be like, I mean, it just seems perfect. Like an Indian.
Well, no, not really. it's you know, it, and it, it that's it's a stage of life I'm at, because probably some of my best, very, very best friends throughout this journey are dead, and everybody again has these man-made timelines which I try to avoid. That say, you know, you're getting close, and they're right, I am. But back when you were a kid, you remember,
yeah.
Somebody died and they were 80 years old and you were 16. You go, that's forever. I'm never going to die. But
you
when
feel
that
immortal,
80-year-old
yeah.
dies and you're 76, it's a different story. You know, you go, well, that's only about 4 years from now. So what I've done in that case, and again, I'm not like a different anybody else. I got to fight off all the negativity. So I try, like in fishing, if I had one negative thought, I try to cover it with 10 positive thoughts. So in this case, well, he was only 4 years older than me. He died, and he's only 4 years older than me. And so now I don't think in terms of years. I think in the terms of days. Okay, how many days is that? And then you can convert that. How many hours is that I've got to live? Then it gets kind of neat again.
Yeah, that,
I think about then how many hours. Anyway, never mind.
That's outstanding. Like, that's a lot of hours, Rick. You logged a lot.
Oh yeah, I've got a lot more hours.
Yeah, and you're still logging.
It's only 4 years.
Yeah, and still logging. I mean, that's the amazing thing. And let's think about this. You know Ronnie Moore, right? You know.
Oh yeah.
You know Ronnie Moore and Kyle Jesse. Well, those guys know stats, right? Those guys know Everything. Right. Yeah. They know their stats, guys. And we probe them all the time. We probe them hard, Rick. I'm not going to kid you. And we found out that you have 400. And now this is in the BASS books, 492 derbs. All right. 492. Now, get this. Out of those 492, you have cashed a check in 314 of them. 314 of them. That's pretty darn good. Now, get this here. 16 wins, 123 top tens. Here's the cool part. In your BASS career, you've caught 13,408 pounds of bass. That's insane, right? 13,000 pounds of bass in tournaments, Rick. Think about that.
Yeah, see, I can't. I can think about it, but I don't really comprehend those kind of numbers. Math was my worst subject in school.
Mine too. And,
you know, and I, but you know, after you throw all those numbers at me, I still often wonder why I chose and I love it so much to do something that I'm going to fail at the majority of the time. Well, and that kind of sounds like a negative, but it still amazes me that I love something that much. And, you know, and there's two guys that I used to think I loved this. Nobody loved it more than I did. And yet there was two guys that eventually didn't qualify for the elites, and they were kind of pushed out of the BASS. And one of them was Big Dave Smith, and the other one was Charlie Hartley.
Yeah, Charlie.
They loved what they did, and I hate to say that, but they were rarely seen holding a trophy. But they loved it more than anything. And it kind of broke my heart when they were kind of pushed out, because I realized how much that I didn't love it as much as they did. So much of my love, I will never know for sure how much, was because of my success, because of my wins. And take those away, would I love it as much as them? And I'm not sure I would. So I don't know. It gives you a different appreciation for it, because 16 wins out of 400 tournaments is not a very good batting average. I don't care. If you're a baseball player, you're sitting on the bench. So, but I understand. I understand the game we play. It's got incredible, endless number of variables. And it's like I told PETA one time in Pittsburgh when they were upset that we were catching the fish. I said, I can do everything I know how to do right, but who makes the final decision if they're going to participate? Not me, the fish. And that's still the biggest challenge of all, is trying to get that little green fish to participate.
Yeah, right. I mean, and what an accomplishment when you do. And you said you're not successful. I want to just, you said, oh, okay, I only won the X amount of derbs. Well, listen, here, I mean, you, as far as your top tens, and I know winning is everything, I guess, in bass fishing. But when you judge the amount of, the percentage of the times that you've been at the top, it's insane. Like, let's take, for example, let's go back to like 99 and 2000. And you were a two tour guy then, right? You were on FLW and BASS. And at that point, I think I was counting it up before. It was like 14 or 15 derbs a year in those. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. That's low. I used to fish 20 to 25 big ones a year, because I was like, there was always another circuit. And then there was regional circuits, and then there was the West Coast circuit. So I was fishing as many as 25 big ones a year. And yeah, I've won two of the biggest FLW events, the Forestwood Opens, biggest paychecks ever, $200,000 a piece.
Yeah.
Now, I won the U.S. Open twice, and to me, it was my greatest feat of all time. And I don't mean to offend anybody, but there's no tournament like the U.S. Open.
You love it.
Because I love it because the Lake Safe Fish and Lake Mead used to be the lake we always fish until it got too low last year, is that it does not allow you to lie about how good a fisherman you are. That lake does not allow it.
So interesting.
You better be a good fisherman. Yeah, you better be a good angler, and you better be in shape. Because that was always held back in July and August. And it was a 4-day event. It was the Iditarod of bass fishing. And to win it proved more to me than any event I've ever fished. So, yeah, I fished a lot of other events. And you know, I have, you know, over 20 major wins, you know. So, but again, we're again focusing on the wins, and ultimately, you know, it's important. And I watch the young anglers now, and the wins are important because that gives them credentials, and it's so important to have credentials to keep sponsors behind you. Without the wins, the sponsors aren't going to be there.
Yeah, it's it's amazing too that you bring up those opens as the Western Open as one of your personal milestones or life moments,
right.
and so did Aaron. Aaron loved that derb too. That was super special to him,
yeah,
too. And talking about a test of mental and physical prowess, that event is something else. I mean,
there was nothing like it. Nothing like it. And it's like I said, because and it was the most equal tournament we ever fished, because the lake would never allow you to assume you could win it in one place. You know, a lot of lakes we go to, you got to be in ABC areas or you're not going to win.
Right.
We know that now. You know,
yeah.
It's just like going to St. Clair. You know that there's two or three places you better be in for the quality of fish it's going to take to win. St. Lawrence River, if you're not out in a big lake, you ain't going to win. Okay. And so, unless the weather's just blowing you off the big lake. So, but Lake Mead was not that way. There was no local advantage. The lake was tough. You had to prove yourself every day, both physically and mentally. And it was just every time you couldn't predict where it's going to be won. And so it's fair. It's a very fair lake.
Yeah, that's I love reading about those derbs back then too. Your victories there. I want to ask
what's
you
a derb.
That's what us knuckleheads call an event, Rick.
I know.
Hey, so back in '99 and 2000, all right, when you were fishing 25 derbs a year, as you say, the other circuits, those 2 years, you seemed to kind of do no wrong, basically. Were those 2 years going back to that state of mind like you discussed in that Red Man era where you were discovering things?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And try to keep it short because it can get too complicated and people get upset.
No.
But,
no, go and take your
not giving credit. They don't think you're giving credit to the right places, and I do. But at the same time, I wasn't doing anything more than the Olympic players were doing. I was studying the Germans and how they were using visualization and how they were using meditation and all these things that would get your mind at a high, extreme level of performance and tapping into. To where did that not? Where does knowledge come from? Where does intuition is our biggest, and most powerful thing we have as anglers. Most of us prefer to call it gut feeling, but intuition. Where did it come from? And that's what Einstein was trying to figure out. And you finally get a few answers there if you go to the right places. But intuition, everything in the universe is made of matter and energy. Okay, and quantum physics proves that. Now genetics proves that. And is that so? Intuition is this way of accessing all the known knowledge, and all knowledge is already known. And by okay, quantum physics makes a statement that quantum mechanics does that. No, let me start with genetics first. Genetics makes a statement, and if you can get one hair of the human being, all the genetic code for that whole body is in that one hair. you can scientifically say we could possibly recreate a dinosaur if we can get one tiny cell from that dinosaur out of some ice age area. And if then basically, you know, then and then you combine that, and that if we're one cell in the universe, okay, then, and this is quantum mechanics, if we're one cell in the universe, then we can access all information that's already in the universe. And that's where Einstein was. That's what he had been eventually felt was that's where his knowledge came from. He was accessing, you know, the information that's already in him. He just had to figure out how to do it. So now we'll leave it there. So,
but yes, when do I learn the rest? You get when do I learn the rest? That's what I want to know, Rick. I mean, you say we'll leave it there, but we all want to learn the rest.
Well, we violate some social deals when we get into the rest of it.
This is Stray Cast. You know that, right?
I know that, but also know it's on Facebook. And, and I've been, and I've had these groups try to assassinate me, not physically, but to,
I get it.
You know, so I just learned to stay away from it.
Okay. Maybe someday we can talk about it then. Maybe someday we'll be able to.
Yeah. I mean, you can in the boat, as long as we don't mic'd up or something.
Okay. No, I feel I need to know. I really do. And
we all need to know, because if we don't keep learning, like you said, then the world gets too small. And the world is so much bigger than what we want to limit it to. And the way we function in it is so much more than we take advantage of.
Have you been able? I've noticed in this. This is weird saying this, but I've noticed myself as an individual evolving. I don't know through self-awareness. And do you notice yourself evolving throughout your career? And is that just something that happens to everyone? Do people notice themselves evolving?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if people as a whole do. I don't really think they do. I think there's a handful that do it at what we call an unconsciously competent level. And then there's a tiny group that do it at a consciously competent level. And that's kind of where I was with the Lake Havasu epiphany, and then with my daughter sitting in my lap and pointing out things, was that I had to learn and be more competent about how all this worked. My best friend Mike Dice told me, he said, you know, you still think you're a fluke. And this is back in that period you were talking about where I was dominated. And I said, what do you mean, Mike? He knew how to make me mad at him. Yeah. But I realized after thinking about it, it was true. And he said, you've got to be conscious. You've got to become consciously competent. You're still unconsciously competent. And most of the good anglers out there now are like me. We're like me. They're unconsciously competent. They don't really understand fully how it's happening. And I don't know, I don't even know if I can right now pick out one that I would say is consciously competent. I'm not completely consciously competent. And that's why, you know, all athletes have these peaks and valleys. And of course, you can look at timelines and all that type of thing too. But, so yeah, I from that point at Havasu and then with my daughter, I started becoming more aware. And awareness is the whole key, self-awareness.
Yeah, man. It's I just feel like there's so much more to learn, right? I don't know how else to put it. We'll continue that another time. But here's something that I feel what we need to talk to you about. And I want to change gears a little bit here. And this is I'm going to do a little Stray Cast segment with you, Rick, and it's
good.
Yeah, it's called Klun Mythology, Fact or Fiction. Okay. There's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's been said about you, Rick Klun. And, you know, it's almost mythical at this point. And I want you to just let us know if it's fact or fiction, stomp it, nip it at the bud, as they'd say.
All right.
So here we go.
I've only fished naked one time in my whole life. So don't let that be one of them.
That's not even in there. But that's fine. I've fished naked more than once.
Because I was asked that in a podcast one time. Do you ever fish naked?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Anyway, go ahead.
I have. I just like multiple times. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
All right. So here's some mythological Rick Klun fact or fictions. Now, the first one of the oldest ones that we heard about you is that you would drive to the lake with the windows down, no matter what the conditions, hot, cold, no AC, no heater, to acclimate yourself to the day. Is that true or false?
Fact. Very true. Fact.
You still do it?
Yeah, and it was basically Lake Mead was the real test of that, because a lot of times my family was going with me and they were chewing me out the whole way. So because I wouldn't turn the air on, because I knew what I was fixing to face at Lake Mead. I mean, it was going to be brutal, and it was brutal. I mean, I've seen more guys, big name guys, flown from the lake to Vegas hospital with heat stroke than anywhere else in my whole career.
Is that when you were still pulling the boat with the station wagon? Because I see you like Chevy Chase in Family Vacation right now.
Station wagon. No. I had a van. I think I had a van.
You had a van at that time. You did have a station wagon. Yeah. We watched an instructional video that the Ginger Ninja sent me, and you had a station wagon pulling your boat. It was awesome.
I don't remember that. You'd have to show me that picture.
All right. It's in an instructional video. Maybe it was the guy just backing your boat in that had the station wagon.
Okay. Maybe that's it.
But it really did. Hey, so is it true that before tournaments that you used to bathe in the water to get acclimated to what you felt the fish were feeling? Is that fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Fiction. So you never just...
I did bathe in water, but it wasn't for that reason. It was because I was usually camped out. And back then, they didn't have showers and stuff. So I went down to the boat ramp at about, 11 o'clock or midnight. And I'd walk out on the boat ramp with my dad, because he would sometimes camp out with me, and bathe. And we would be butt naked. And my dad, I never forget, he would go, "These blankety blank mosquitoes are using my ball head for a runway," because that was all we had sticking out of the water.
So it wasn't really to acclimate yourself like what the bass was feeling. It was just purely for bathing purposes.
Yeah, yes, but it probably did both.
Okay. See, there we go again. All right. Say, is it true that you are a master of karate and can split the hull of a bass boat with one single karate chop?
The whole of a bass boat.
Yeah, fact or fiction. You are that powerful.
I am in black belt. I was a black belt in karate, but no, I would never do that with fiberglass. Maybe, but not fiberglass.
Tube before? You ever smash a tube before, Rick?
No. Even when you see them doing that on TV, it's a choice piece of wood. They're smashing. And I want to qualify that I was a 40-year-old black belt. There's a big difference between a 40-year-old black belt and an 18-year-old black belt.
Yeah, that's badass.
It's called speed. It's called speed. I mean, their speed is unbelievable.
It's pretty amazing, though. We've heard that you could do amazing things as a 40-year-old in karate. Would you classify yourself as amazing at karate?
Well, it saved my body multiple times. I mean, because the one thing you do a lot of in karate, especially for a 40-year-old, you do a tremendous amount of stretching. And you know, my little Vietnamese 6-degree black belt master, he would make you do stretching that you didn't think you could do. And I mean, I had several falls, where you'd step up on a dewy covered gunwale of a boat and slip, and one leg would go in the lake and the other leg would stay in the boat, and had a lot of stuff like that where you made incredibly bad falls and, yes. and around the lakes and around your boat. But I should have torn something. I should have broke something. And thank goodness I never did. And it was due to totally that stretching. And it still, it amazed me. I still retain, even at 70 something, I still retain a lot of that. Not as much, but I still have some. I still kick, you know, I could still probably kick you in the belly button pretty hard.
Yeah.
I wouldn't try to kick you in the face like I'm used to.
Now, I spend a day in the boat with you and I still notice it's like you are not afraid to take some time out and stretch just to keep your day going and keep you comfortable. I admired that.
Well, you have to with time. Things do change. I do try to have to eat a little bit now where I never used to eat. So
it's, I think it all goes into the Rick Klun mystery, you know, the mystique of Rick Klun. And one of the other mysteries or Rick Klun mythology is that an ancient Indian spirit actually leaped into your soul. And every time you win a tournament, it's the ancient Indian spirit warrior coming out of you.
I did not come up with that. I do share. I'm not Native American. I looked at my ancestry, even though my dad was raised in the Cherokee Indian and Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. I thought, well, surely I'm part of it, because going up there as a kid, I was surrounded by mostly Native American kids, but I'm not. My ancestry said I'm not, but I do. I have and still do, and always have shared their love and understanding of nature. I totally believe, you know, in their idea of God is the Great Spirit. It's the spirit, but it's different. It's the spirit that moves through all things. And probably the only time I ever really got up at church was I was 13 years old. And the preacher got up there and was telling us that our dogs were not going to heaven.
What?
And I got up and I got upset. I mean, 13-year-old kid, I found myself standing in the podium. My grandmother was trying to pull me back down, and I was telling him he was wrong. I didn't know the guy. I mean, it shocked me because I couldn't stand the thought. He said, dogs don't have a soul and they're not going to go to heaven. So that's, again, first time I asked a Native American friend of my grandmother's. I said, what do you think? He said, the Great Spirit moves through all things, not just the things that we want to make private. And that's why I've kind of embraced that for the rest of my life. And a lot of the other things, especially what their feelings were about nature and that all things are connected.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. This one, I'm pretty much sure that this is true, Rick, that this mythological fact is true about you, and that you have the ability to get inside competitors' brains and even appear as an apparition floating over their bed to take them out of derbs and take them out of competition. You've done this,
you know,
on documented.
You pulled this on me before.
I know you've done this on documented occasions. It's documented. It's not. Can you do that? Is that you? You can hover above competitors' beds?
No. I can get in their brains maybe, but no. Why would I want to do that? I wouldn't want to. There's a lot better people's beds to hover above than a competitor's bed.
I didn't make it up.
You read it. You read it in the book.
Yeah.
It wasn't Bass Wars. It's a documentary film that you saw it in.
Yeah.
On bass fishing.
Yeah. So and everything.
No, that came from that came from somebody else, and you know how it is. My dad told me one time when I was really starting to be successful, he said, "Rick, you know I love the success you're having." He said, "I'm so proud of you." He said, "But you know, success breeds resentment, and especially at home." And so a lot of that kind of stuff you hear about me or other competitors, that's really where it's coming from. It's professional jealousy, or it's just we don't see the world the same way they do. But, you know, that's okay.
Interesting. And it's I like that you brought up Bass Wars. I like that book. I think it's a great book. And you in Bass Wars, like, you gave zero Fs. Like, you were like, you said whatever you wanted to say, and you were just you. Like, I mean, for example, like, you're like, I mean, I'm just gonna say it. It's in the book. Orlando Wilson. Like, you okay. would just say whatever you wanted at the time, and I admired it. I liked it. I thought you were one of the first anglers to really just show that you were you.
Well, yes, and of course, you know, it's sometimes, you know, where should you draw the line? And I the war I was fighting when that happened was the, especially in the early days of bass fishing, when you were competing for sponsors, I thought there was only one thing that should count, and that's performance. It's not how, what way you combed your hair. It's not the pretty clothes you put on, but your sponsors should appreciate more your performance. And back then, it was just people that were getting sponsors, and they, in my opinion, they didn't deserve them because of that kind of stuff. So I was kind of trying to, probably unfairly trying to point that out, that, you know, just because a guy has a TV show doesn't mean he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I probably shouldn't have done it, but at times I wish I could do it more.
And whether right, wrong, or indifferent, I mean, it was just like you were not, the whole point of me bringing that up is that you were not afraid to state your feelings at a time where everybody was in bass fishing.
Yeah, we still are. You know, as a whole, because you got, the thing you forget is that if you're just representing yourself, say whatever you want or whatever you feel in your heart. But we're not just representing ourselves. You know, I'm representing, you know, Bass Pro Shop, and I'm representing other companies, and I'm representing my family. And so we have to, life changes. You got to make better decisions sometimes.
Sure. All right, Rick, are you a stubborn man?
You probably need to ask my family members about that. I don't know.
Yeah, where's Melissa?
She would say I am. if you want Melissa to answer that, I would say she would say I am a stubborn man, right? And they're in the other room. I am, where it's the hardest to change, and I'm at that stage in my career where I had to change, is giving up what worked for you in the past and what made you successful. It's incredibly difficult to abandon what made you successful. And nowadays, you know, you've seen the leap in technology and all of that, and how the sport is really changing in the technological way. And still, sometimes, it's hard for me, and I think a lot of people just my age, I know Larry Nixon's one of them, it's hard for me to change over to this new way of fishing tournaments, competitive fishing.
Yeah, it's it's grueling for everyone. I mean, it's no matter what age you are, those Bassmaster events, it's a week long. Like, think about the Sabine, man. That was wild. Like, that Texas heat. Unreal.
Yeah, but I like heat.
You always have.
I think, yeah, you know, I like things that challenge you and make you realize how important your body is. And weather conditions, cold and heat, you know. If you're not feeling the heat and if you're not feeling the cold, you're probably dead. So I like it when I feel those things and it tells me I'm still alive.
Keeps you going. So when you first came into this deal, and let's say you're in the parking lot of the Derp, and you just walk by, and there's some let's say already established professional anglers there. You, Rick Klun, walk by them. What's something that you would want to overhear about yourself at that point of your career? Just give me an example. It could be a real story. It could be hypothetical. I mean, where were you at that time?
That's a tough situation because there was really only two people that I really would have cared about what they said back then.
Nice.
And Well, no, there was a couple of personal friends, but let's not talk about the friends. But it was, and they were great anglers. Tommy Martin was one of them, and then another angler named Elroy.
Welcome back. There was a rumbling in the sky, and all of a sudden the connection was lost, but we are back, Bass Galaxy. Welcome back, Rick Klun from the compound in Ava. Hi, Rick. Sorry about that. We don't know what happened, but there was a thunderous boom.
Really? Oh, we have a lot of strange things that happen in the Ozarks too. So I forgive you.
Yeah. I think that there was just so much amazing energy going on that all of a sudden it had to release is what happened. Thanks, Melissa, for getting that back together. And thanks, Andy, for getting that back together.
Said thanking you.
Yes. Thank
you. No, I'm. I see me. I still don't see you, but I hope that's okay.
Oh, you don't see me? I see you perfectly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there anyway. You are. Hi.
There's something. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It could be this alligator head right here that I'm holding up. It could be that right there. I don't. I'm not sure. Hey, but we were learning more about you before the sky kaboomed. And there's a couple more things that I think the Bass Galaxy really needs to, maybe you could help them understand about you. They want to know more about like things Rick Klun does. So let's go back. I don't remember where we left off. Do you remember where we left off actually, Rick?
Yes, we were actually one of the mythologies. One after Orlando Wilson.
Which, by the way, I admired that he used a left-hand giant ambassador on the smallest pistol grip rod. That's something I'll always remember about Orlando. And he taught me how to use a floating worm. True story. I learned that on his show as a kid. So he did pay it forward. There it is.
Well, that's why it's not fair for me to say that, because Vince Lombardi never played football, from what I understand. Yes, he's one of the greatest coaches ever.
Yeah, that's, I mean, very good. Very good analogy. The Rick, I mean, everybody in life has good qualities and bad qualities. And everybody in life seems to have some sort of guilty pleasure. Now, a guilty pleasure is not necessarily a good quality or a bad quality. It could just be a way to reward ourselves as a human. Now, do you, Rick, have a guilty pleasure? What is your guilty pleasure in life, Rick?
I have more than one, but I'm trying to think of the one that's best to tell. I basically, the only one I could think of is I enjoy gambling. In fact, I've always looked at what I do as gambling. I pay an entry fee, and the rest of us pay an entry fee. And if I beat you, I take your money. And if they beat me, they take mine. And fishing, historically, it's been kind of that way. But I love playing hold'em poker, I would say that would be it. In fact, I would love to play out in the big tournament that they have in the World Series of Poker. But the one thing I've learned, because I have actually gone out and played in one of the events, one of the smaller events, not the $10,000 one, and there was still 3,000 entries in it, and I got up down to about the last 800. But you know what would kill me in it is I never sit, and there you got to sit on your butt for too dang long. And I just can't do it.
Too much nervous energy?
Well, no, it's just sitting is not a natural human position to be in. Doctors will tell you that now. And unfortunately, fishing, I've always stand. And they tell me a lot now, even at my age, and they say, man, you know, you need to get one of these little deals. You've got such good balance. And again, they tell older people now to get those little seesaws to stand on and rock back and forth. And I said, I do that all the time, every day in my boat. You know, so no wonder. You know, and it builds up, definitely builds up your balance and everything. And standing is really what humans were meant to do, not sitting. So that's it. It was one of the really good side benefits of fishing.
Yeah, and plus that's true. Warriors don't sit. You know what I mean? No way.
I'm not embracing this warrior day you got going on. I'll be honest with you.
Come on. I'm not the only one that looks at. Tell me why you don't embrace it. Why are you not a warrior? Why are you not an Earth warrior?
Well, it implies that you're fighting someone else, and most of our warrior stuff is on abstract hidden agendas in modern times.
Interesting.
And one of my favorite movies was the one where he went out into Kevin Costner and lived with the Indians for a while. But anyway, he basically fought a battle with them against some other tribes, and he said it's the first time I fought a war that I knew what I was fighting for.
Wow!
And Dances with Wolves. That's the one movie I'm talking about.
Dances with Wolves, yes.
But anyway, and I was around, you know, the Vietnam War too. I had two brothers in it, and so there's a lot of negative connotations there.
Okay, I understand. And I'm glad you explained it, because I mean, a lot of people do. I don't know where it came from, because I didn't make that up. You've been referred to as a water warrior or an earth warrior. And I read it as a child about you.
So, well, it was actually used in our book, The Angler's Quest.
Yes.
There was a series in it called The Earth Warriors. And it's still, you know, very, very, very important, but it's like a lot of things. Preaching it doesn't usually do much good. It's getting people to, again, get out in nature themselves. They start to love nature, and then they will then love it so much they will try to protect it. Gotcha. So it's just how are you going to fight the war? I try to do it in a more passive way than an aggressive way.
Okay, and I like that. I'm glad you explained that too. So I will no longer refer to you as a warrior.
That's okay.
Hey,
you will.
Probably will. Do you believe in the paranormal? Have you had a paranormal experience?
Yes. Well, yeah, definitely everybody does.
Yeah.
But I'll quote one of our astronauts. The only difference between normal and extraordinary, or ordinary and extraordinary, or normal or paranormal, is just a gap in knowledge and information.
Hmm.
It's, you know, there's a gap between the normal and the paranormal, but it's just, it eventually will be explained through knowledge and understanding. And it's just that, you know, the U.S. government, you know, hired remote viewers. They hired people they thought had extra sensory perception to try to spy on other countries. So they believe something is to it, and I do too. It's just part of what we don't understand. We don't have the science behind it. I live with a person who can think things into existence. So
really,
yeah, no, it's just, oh, definitely, we all do that.
Yeah,
fishermen are the worst in the world. Like, I think failure into existence 9 times out of 10.
Hmm. That's the power of the mind. Is it connected? Is it all connected back to what you were talking about, Einstein, to tapping in to the unknown?
Well, no, I don't want to speak for Einstein. I've studied him, but I certainly don't totally understand. But no, it is. It is basically, you know, again, how, and it's still the probably the most unanswered question there is, how does human consciousness work? Is there such a thing as collective consciousness where all knowledge, past, present, and future, exists right now? Can you tap into it? And there are ways to do it. And Einstein did it through pure exhaustion. So it's kind of like, okay, try to make it in simple terms. It's not, it just won't be simple. It's complicated, but it's like the old saying, you know, that's why prayer is so powerful, is that if the prayer is pure, and that's the catch. It's the purity of the prayer can direct energy.
Interesting.
And that's why it is powerful. But I'm not sure how pure it is at times. So too much of it is, you know, selfish, you know, selfish prayer. And that's not any good. But I do believe in the statement that if you have a son and you're the father, okay, and God is our father, should you pray for him to help you? And don't do that until you've done everything in your power. The old saying was, work like hell, like everything depends on you, and then pray like hell, like everything depends on God. But if you don't do that first one, it don't matter about the second one.
Yeah, you got to put it in, you got to put the action, you got to put the works.
Well, you got to be, yeah, you do. You know, you've been given all the tools already. So you, until you use all those tools at their highest level, then you can ask for help from whatever the higher source you want to believe is. And that's all Einstein did. He wore himself out. He did his part. And somewhere it enabled him to access the answers sometimes.
Yeah, I love that. And there's a lot of people out there, Rick. I mean, I'll just be honest. They're like, why ain't these boys talking about plugs? They're talking about Einstein.
Oh, yeah, no. I warned you about that at the beginning. I'm not sure this is what your audience wants to.
You know what? We're learning, and it's a process that can help people catch more fish. Ultimately, it really is. It worked for you, Rick. Why couldn't it work for other people? Why not? Why can't it?
Oh, it can. It's just basic principles. They're not new by any means.
It's applying the principles.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, don't look at me as something special and don't look at me as a hero. And I said, you respect me for how hard I've worked to do what I do. And then if you apply that same thing to what you want to do, yeah, there are no limits, like I used to say.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Hey, I need to go back and ask you though. You did not hesitate whatsoever when I asked you if you've ever had a paranormal experience. And when you say you have had a paranormal experience, is that being with someone who could think something into existence, or have you had specific moments where you've experienced things you can't explain? Do you care to talk about it?
I was floating around my competitor's bedrooms.
Besides that,
I'm playing with you.
I know. Thanks, besides Jason. All that time, though.
Yeah.
I mean, is there?
Yeah, but some of them you wouldn't. Most people would not define that way. You know, they would not define. Because it, again, depends on what your definition of paranormal is. Is it ghost? Is it, you know, other dimensions? Is it whatever your definition is? Mine was just basically doing what I've been trying to explain and not doing great in a great way, is how does intuition work? And then getting into it and intuitive insight that just is unexplainable, and it's in fishing, you know. And then I've worked hard to understand how intuition. That's where I've read so much, and I don't know all the answers, still don't. But the intuition was sometimes I would get information that I had no explanation where in the world that came from. And so it wouldn't be what you're looking for, like I would walk in the woods and a Sasquatch come out and grab me or something.
None of that, huh? Like Hackney? None of that stuff?
But Hackney lives where they live, though.
He does.
Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shafalai Basin. Ain't no telling what's there.
He got a Sasquatch camp. He got his eye on. I don't know. That. Does it? Yeah. Hey, you've studied anglers. You've studied artists. You've studied writers. You've studied theologians. Let's put it simply like this. Are anglers more artists? Are they more athletes?
That's a good question. They have both qualities. And some of them display, if I look at, there are certain anglers I look at, and they were more, like Jimmy Houston and Hank Parker. And this is just my observations. They were more machines. I mean, they were just, you wind them up and they just wouldn't stop.
Yeah, Jimmy still.
Jimmy's still that way. Charlie Hartley's that way. I mean, he'll launch his boat, and the next thing you see, he's riding down to the, from where he parked his car on a skateboard,
Charlie's through the awesome.
Night in a in the parking lot, and yet there's yet then if you watch even now these young anglers, these high school kids and these college kids, they're casting, and I'm gonna put it in the terms of my son that I captained the high school team. One time we were fishing, they are incredible. Casters. I mean, that's art when you watch where they can put a lure nowadays.
Sure.
Over and over. In fact, one time I watched him skip the lure 20 yards under this huge dock to the darkest spot in under the dock, which is what you're taught to do. And he didn't look at me, and this is high school, in a high school tournament, he looked at his partner and goes, "Zach, that was orgasmic." And my mouth kind of, I'm sure, dropped open if you had a camera on it. And then I went, "No, I understand what he's talking about. I occasionally make that kind of cast too. Perfect doesn't necessarily mean you catch a fish." God, it was an artistic, beautiful cast.
And it really is. That's why I asked it too, because I have to tell you, Rick, in the time that I spent in the boat with you, I'm an observer, okay? And I noticed a few things about you. In your fluid motion, as far as your mechanics, it's basically flawless, whether you realize it or not. Also, your execution. It's almost like when you hook a fish, every single bit of muscle memory in your body, every single bit of triggered response that has accumulated in your brain switches to nothing but executing the landing of a fish. And whether you realize it or not, it's kind of like switching into autopilot. Do you understand what I'm saying as an observer?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you work so hard, create something, and then you have to finish it. And landing the fish is one of if I had one critique of anglers that I watch on these TV shows and these tournaments, is they make so many mistakes landing a fish. It's kind of like you have to rehearse, and it's kind of like, again, I had that special Army or Naval Special Forces guy out to talk to kids here at my house one time. And he brought up a subject on these missions that they had been on two really big missions. And one of the kids, how kids are, goes, "Did y'all have anybody get killed?" And he said, "No." And they said, "Really?" He said, "No." He says, "Both missions went off perfectly, and we never lost a person." And this is what I'll never forget. He said, he says, and the reason is, he says, is that we rehearse everything in advance. Every move, everything that could possibly happen, everything. We rehearse it over and over and over in advance. Landing the fish is the same way. You've rehearsed it so much over the years and in your mind that the more you rehearse it, the less chance it's going to fail. And so that's kind of the way landing a fish is for me. You know, I know all the things to look for. I know all the things, the moves it can make. I know all the moves I have to counter with. And do I ever lose a fish? Sure. But I'll argue that I lose fewer than most people in a year's time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch. You're very at ease on the water. Out of all the anglers I've observed, you are the most at ease. Whether you are inside or not, externally, you're peaceful. It conveys.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it does, man. So let me, in this new style of angling that you're talking about, it's amazing young anglers. Is your style of fishing now become the unique style, Rick? Is the old school style the unique style now?
I don't look at it that way. I look at it as the old style, and it's and I can define it in certain terms, and I can define the new in certain terms. The old style, all of us that were good at it, you know, Kevin, myself, Tommy Martin, and others I'm not going to name at the moment, but we were what I call random cast anglers. We beat you by making more casts than we could possibly make in a day. And I've been timed officially over 2,000 something casts a day.
Wow.
In a six, 7, 8 hour fishing day. And we're random cast, but so that sounds not real good. But, and then again, we, in the early days, we introduced pattern fishing, which basically all it did was convert random cast into high probability random cast. High probability
percentage,
random cast.
Yes.
The ones the ones best at that then were the ones that were winning. So I based everything in my old style on that. Nowadays, and I'll use a friend of mine, Cody Huff, a young angler.
Yeah, Cody.
Here in Missouri. And that I watched him beat all the best fishermen on Table Rock, and he only made 200 casts that day. And boy, it took me a while to think that through. And then when I finally thought it through and was subjective about it, even though I would criticize you if you only made 200 casts a day, I would say you can't possibly beat me or Kevin Van Dam or those kind of anglers. I was totally wrong. Because even if I make 2,000 casts a day, here's the question. How many of them are actually out of fish? Even using the best pattern, high probability knowledge I have. Still, if I was lucky to throw in 100 fish, I had to make 2,000 casts to throw in 100 fish. Cody made only 200. But here's the catch. Every cast he made was out of fish. So if you factor in the efficiency, they're beating our tails off.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. The new school is the old school, but the old school is still the old school.
I still enjoy the old school. I envy the young ones for that reason. Their acceptance of technology. I envy them because these kids nowadays, I didn't start learning until I was 26, 27 years old. That's when I got involved in competitive fishing at a bass club level, and that's when my learning started. I didn't hit my peak until I was in my mid to late 30s. Yeah. Okay. These young ones are starting when they're 6 and 7 and 8.
That's amazing.
And their knowledge and, their knowledge and information is 100 times better than ours was. And so they're getting all this incredible teaching and learning at an early age. They'll hit their peak like you'd like to see a lot of them right now doing in their 20s before I even started learning. So I'm jealous that their peak could last twice as long as my peak last. But where I feel kind of sad for them is is I'm so glad that I learned the way I learned, because it did, it kept me connected to nature sensory-wise at the highest level I could ask. I could hear the sound of a fish splashing and know what it was without looking. I could smell bait fish. I could see with wide-angle vision. I could see with focus vision. You know, I could feel everything my lure was doing. I knew exactly the movement of the lure that caused the fish to strike. And so I was at a very high sensory level. I feared that these kids might be losing that. Now, I've talked to my youngest son, who plays a lot of video games, and I've asked him those questions. And he points out some things that they get just as immersed probably as we do, but it's going to be in a sensory-wise at a different level. You know, well, they still have that, what he refers to, Dad, you have a spiritual connection. He said, I don't know that, you know, looking at a screen all day is going to, if you're going to be able to have that spiritual connection. Yeah. So I'm enjoying observing it. I'm enjoying observing the kids. I envy them, but I'm grateful for the way I had to fish.
Well, Rick, you are a grand inspirer, to many ages, to many, different demographics of anglers. And you've said things that flow naturally that have influenced many of our lives in a positive direction. Again, you once said, and it was resonated so much with me, and I'm going to leave us with this, Rick, a couple of your quotes that really hit home to us in the Bass Galaxy, that you said desperation can be the biggest motivator and your friend. And you said that at the beginning of your, or it was early on in your career that you had said that. And also with what you're saying now, that never accept that your finest moments have already happened. They coexist. Everything relates. Those two statements to me relate. Do you see it as the man that said them?
Yeah, I did. I know that's where that came from, and I know that, by far, desperation was my biggest motivator in my early career, especially. And failure you hear this from all sports people in all kinds of sports. Failure is your greatest teacher, not success. And then, you know, of course, as I've grown older, we can all be real guilty, no matter what your journey in life has been. We've all had a hope, some incredible moments in our life. And all that I realized when I won at St. John's River, that my peak is, I'm not going to say, but the peak of my career is probably in the past. But that doesn't mean that all your greatest moments are in the past. We can still have incredible moments, ahead of us. And I've been rewarded by saying that, but I've had two different people come up, and one of them was in a very bad car wreck, didn't think he'd ever walk or fish again. And he walked up to me at Lake Gunnersville and said, I want to thank you. And that's what he thanked me for, was that making that statement. He said, once I heard that statement, I went to the therapist and I worked every single day. Now I'm walking and now I'm fishing again.
It's beautiful.
So you hope that if those kind of things have that effect. And that's definitely an incredible thing that you positive thing that he shared with me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, and there's so many stories like that that you don't even. You've affected so many people you don't even know about. And that's the magic of all of this. And there's so much more that we're looking forward to from you, Rick, for lack of a better way to put it. You're so important to all of us, bud.
Well, hey, I appreciate it, but again, I'm only an example of what you can do. I'm not anything. I'm not better than you. You're better than me. I can't do what you do. And everybody's got something they're a lot better than me at. So I just, yeah, if I can be just, and then, like you said, inspire people to pursue those things that they're good at and put the effort and work behind them, then okay.
Rick, you're an amazing teacher by example. And that is one of the greatest attributes that a person can have. And that is cool. I didn't understand it when you were telling me this in the boat, because I was all gaga. Oh, I'm fishing with Rick Klein. All right. But here's the thing. It's like, man, Rick, this is one of the best days of my life. And you're like, don't ever count that your best moments are in your past. And I'm like, no, but this is the best day of my life, Rick. And I wasn't listening to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, that, of course, that brings up Bart Simpson when he stuck his tongue to the telephone pole in the winter.
Yeah.
And he looked at his dad. You remember that one?
Yeah.
His dad. I'm reversing this on you. Looked at his dad and said, this is the worst day of my life. And his dad went, so far.
So far. So. Rick, I've had an amazing time with you tonight, and I hope the Bass Galaxy has as well. Did you have a good time, Rick?
Always do, Pat. You challenge me. You get me to say things I shouldn't say, and some of it I'll probably get called down on, but that's okay. I like to challenge people too, because it makes them think.
Yeah.
Maybe makes them think.
You do that.
Look at things and think a different way about them. At least, you know, and so we're similar in that way. So I do enjoy you.
Yeah, I look forward to getting you to say things in the future that you don't want to say. I look forward to doing this again.
Okay. All right.
Rick, I will see you in Detroit at the St. Clair event. Look forward to seeing you guys there, and enjoy your, are you going to the ICAST, Rick?
When is it? July in Orlando, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, just sometime. I haven't made my mind up yet.
Okay. I'm not going, so if you want to go bassing that week, let's go. Me and you. We're going bassing.
Okay.
Rick, thank you so much for your support of this show throughout the years, and we wish you the best of luck. Thank you, Melissa, too, for everything she does for the Stray Cats. Melissa's just an awesome person. She's just cool AF, as the kids say.
She's the reason I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not gonna pretend any differently.
She made you. She said, "Rick, Pat calling you. Better do this show." Is that how it went?
You're not far off.
Rick, thank you so much, man, and we'll see you soon. Best of luck to you, and enjoy your time between derbs.
Okay, Pat, and the rest of you guys.
Yeah, peace, bud. Thank you so much. That's Rick Klein. Yeah. Wow. I learned a lot, bud. I learned a lot, Andrew Ellenberger, Ginger Ninja. I don't know what else to say. Thank you. I don't know. What did we do, Ginger? Did we go back and broadcast, or after we lost it? Oh, okay, cool. So we're back on live still. I didn't know what happened. But we got three prizes to give away before we get out of here. We have the Tin Cup Whiskey extravaganza pack. We have the prize from Rick's house, and we have the Stray Cast swag. That's the hat and the shirt from the Stray Cast merch store, that the link should be somewhere in the Stray Cast live feed. What are you going to do, text these up on to me, Jinch? I want Han Solo to win. This is Han Solo. I'm holding up Han Solo right now. Hey, look at the new Lucky Rock Bass Galaxy I got from Pedro Fighter Official. It's cobalt blue, like Thor. Like Thor's color. Right there. Adding that to it. That's Van Morrison. Good money. Bob size of money. Boo. All right. What do we got? We got him, Ginge? The Stray Cat. Come on now. Oh, we got three of them. Two of them. Boop, boo, doo, ch, doo, 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 doo. Ha ha! The Stray Cats merch shop extravaganza goes to Robert Grigsby. Is that Shaw's or Chad's bud? Brethren? Robert Grigsby, you won the Stray Cats hat and shirt from Mad Science Print Lab Stray Cats merch store. Now, the Tin Cup prize pack goes to Jeff Shinawo. All right, Andy, what does this say? What's it? Oh, this is the, when you typed it, it says Rick Exaune. Oh, yeah. Yes, I thought. No, I got it now, though. Brian Christensen, you won the Rick Klun pack. There you go. That's how you win stuff on Stray Cast on the Rick Klun show. Thank you for everybody that tuned in. This whole show was available on every single podcast platform. Gingy, you even got it on the iHeartRadios now, huh? Yeah, I saw it on there. I was scrolling through some Waylon Jennings, and I came through the Stray Cats outdoor cartoon television broadcast. They were doing a commercial at the end, James. They were thanking their sponsors. They were thanking Omnia Fishing, Power Pole, Crestliner Boats, Abu and Garcia. They're two people now. Berkeley, Waterland Sunglasses. They're good on the water and the land. He got jocked up with Boss Machine Shop Jack Plate. You can pulse lithium. Gosh dang, are those things light. Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey. Sims Fishing. Ichikawa Poisonous Tipped Fish Hooks. And good old Alpha Angler. Hey, and don't forget about Cal Sag Bass. Congratulations, Ross Tornabini, on your 2 in a row. Lake Michigan. Shining Star. Hey, this has been an Andrew Ellenberger Ginger Ninja production. I'm Pat Renwick. Happy 4th of July, Bass Galaxy. We'll see you after the 4th, and we'll be back. We don't know what we're doing, but we'll figure it out each day like we usually do. I bid you peace. Peace, I bid you. Thank you, Rick Klun. Thank you, Melissa Klun. Thank you, Bass Galaxy. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Peace.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Dance.
No, just kidding. This is Pat. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Stray Cast on iTunes and leave a review. Tell us what you think. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening. Peace.